Welcome to the Awakening to Abundance podcast. I'm your host, Athena. This podcast is more than a podcast. It's a transformative journey designed to help you awaken to your abundance, for you to discover what living the fullness of life means to you, and to co-create that life in this podcast community. As always, we're jumping right in with today's episode. Welcome to the first official interview podcast episode of the Awakening to Abundance podcast. My first guest is Benjamin Forrest, who is a writer, a speaker, and psychedelic integration coach that lives in Monterey, California. Prior to his current vocation, he served 25 years active duty in the military, built a successful real estate business, and helped raise two amazing humans into adulthood. And I'm very excited about having Benjamin be the first interviewee on the podcast because I appreciate how he shares his story of awakening through psychedelics. And while I have not personally tried awakening through psychedelics, I find the process very interesting, and he is a thought leader in this particular area. So he is the person to be talking about if you are at all interested in awakening through this particular mode. But also because I think sometimes there is an idea that abundance or manifestation or awakening, spirituality, is viewed more as something that is geared toward women. And abundance, as the fullness of life, is open to everyone. And while I am sharing my stories and lessons from my own past, and thus seems very one-sided, because of course it is, and is from the female perspective, I want to be very clear that this podcast is not made just for women, but it is made for everyone. And while I have a number of interviews that are women, I am going to be much more cognizant of the fact that we want to hear from all different types of people. And I will be incorporating those different viewpoints into the interviews moving forward. And this was actually a suggestion from one of you, one of the listeners, who said, I know that this is geared toward women. And I was like, oh goodness, actually, no, of course not. Awakening to abundance is for everyone. So I hear you already. I'm making changes. We're going to have so many beautiful other interviews coming forward. And I want to say a little bit more about Ben, because you're going to want to get to know him. You're going to want to follow him. You're going to want to be in his sphere. He has a book coming out in September. It's called Trip of a Lifetime: The Psychedelic Guide to Healing, Loving, and Living. And of course, all of this information will be in the show notes. You can follow him on Instagram at benjamin.forrest.bliss. And you can email him at heybenforrest@gmail.com. Again, all of this information will be in the show notes. And of course, because this is the way that we do all things, we dive right into the interview. So there won't be any after lesson like there is with some of the episodes, because there are so many beautiful nuggets in the actual interview. I hope that you enjoy. I hope that you are intrigued as much as I was. And I hope this opens up another mode of possibility if you are called or aligned to awaken in this particular way. Okay, so tell us a little bit about the book.
Sure.
We'll start there.
Yeah, you know, I don't know actually if I can talk about the book without talking about my own story.
Tell it.
So if it's okay, maybe I'll give a little 60-second version of the story of Benjamin. I grew up in the East Bay of San Francisco, had a very, I think, interesting and vibrant childhood, but lacking in, I think, structure and discipline in some ways. So where does a young chaotic man go to find discipline and structure? For me, the answer was the military. I joined at the age of 20. I retired at the age of 45. So as you can do the math there, that was a quarter century, almost my whole adulthood in the military industrial complex. And when I got out, I felt broken. I had a series of personal losses that just devastated me, starting with my father's death to cancer. My depression got so bad. My career fell apart. My marriage is like falling apart. Like this whole house of cards that I had spent a quarter century building just all collapsed at once, which sounds so horrible, but is actually quite an invitation to build something new. So in the depths of my depression, I started going down a rabbit hole of like, how do I heal myself? I came across a TED talk by Dr. Rosalinda Watts of Imperial College. The TED talk was called, Can Magic Mushrooms Unlock Depression? And I watched this 15-minute video and I saw myself and I saw my problems and I saw my solutions and I knew this is it. So this is in the middle of the pandemic lockdown. I wanted to find psychedelic healing through mushrooms. I found a woman, PhD in psychology, who did group ceremonies, and I went down there. And on April 16th of 2021, everything about my life changed. My heart burst open. My personality became revealed. I was just full of this just energy and enthusiasm and love for life, in utter contrast to the treatment-resistant depression that I'd had before. And it sounds ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous that in one night, boom, that it could all just disappear. And it wasn't just like the depression disappeared and I was in a neutral state. No, the depression disappeared and I was in a place of joy that I never imagined was possible. Mm-hmm. And in that weekend that changed my life, I remember turning to the psychologist, Dr. Stephanie, and saying, this is the most interesting thing in the world. I need to be a part of this somehow. Mm. That was over 4 years ago. And I didn't know what that was going to look like at first. But as things unfolded over the course of 4 years, doing more work with myself and coaching others, enter the book. Like, I really do believe my subconscious brain has been working on this book behind the scenes for over 4 years. That very weekend when I had that transformation, I could actually see my subconscious mind putting together the book. It came up with a draft opening line. The opening line was, she handed me a cup of tea and life was never the same again. And it's interesting that in the final version of the book, that sentence is actually in the second paragraph in the prologue. So this creation, this creativity that we humans do, I have this theory that we, the ego, we aren't actually even doing it. It's this amazing subconscious that we have back here that's doing all the work. And it's like this ego, this conscious mind is like a manager that takes credit for everything, but actually doesn't do it. There's some other magic back there in our minds that are doing it. So yeah, over the last 9 months, this book that's been bouncing around my head has now come to, fruition, come to an end. And it tries to capture everything I have learned along this journey. And I really try to write it with the reader in mind, from this sense of, I found some gold inside myself. I think I can help you find gold inside yourself too. Mm-hmm. Out of the core motivation behind the book.
Mm, I love that. Okay. There's so many beautiful nuggets in that, but I want to go back to the night that you saw the TED talk.
Yeah.
And had an experience where you were like, that, mm-hmm. that's going to be it.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like even in that moment, without having this whole experience, you were already kind of on board with this particular way of healing yourself, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a place of being really all in on something. Mm. So at my lowest low, which is where a chapter one of the book starts, I found this place of desperation to heal. And I thought, well, what if I took all of my energy, all of my resources, all of my passion, all of it, and put it all on this one bet of, can I heal myself? And I quit my job. And I told my wife that my health and happiness is the most important thing right now. Like, I really just harnessed all of this energy inside of me and put it towards this single goal. And I think when we are that focused and that clear and that, like, in alignment with purpose, magic just starts happening. So that TED Talk found me at exactly the right time, and it had exactly the right words from exactly the right person to just tap me on the shoulder and say, this is it. If you're really serious about this purpose, here's your answer.
Was there some sort of surprise that this was it, or you had tried so many other things that, like, your mind was open to the possibilities? Because again, you were in the military for 25 years. This isn't a normal route that a normal veteran would take, right? So it almost feels like there must be some sort of buildup to this opening to this particular option, or maybe not.
Yeah, so I had tried everything while I was in the military and after I got out, many different SSRIs and frontline pills, obviously therapy. I tried religion and spirituality. Like, I had just uncovered what felt like every possible solution I could find, sort of, you know, ECT therapy and stuff that was really medically drastic. In the TED Talk, she talked about SSRIs. And how, while they can be helpful to some people, they don't get to root cause. And the psychedelics can get you to root cause. It was a way to get past the ego and the conscious mind to get back into the subconscious. And if you can get back into the subconscious, you can bring all those patterns that are controlling you out into the light. And if they're out there in the light, suddenly their power is not what it was. There's a very famous Carl Jung quote that articulates that so well. He said, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate. And so I think I had all these patterns going on behind the scenes that were just controlling my behavior in really negative ways. And I couldn't get there. I couldn't get back there. But psychedelics, as I've come to find out, they are the key to getting back into the subconscious. And I was able to see things in new ways and to release them to get to root cause. And I have a metaphor for depression. I can't speak for everybody's depression, but I can speak for mine. I think at the root of it was actually something very simple, something I call emotional constipation. Where the grief and the trauma and the fears and the insecurities of life aren't expressed, and they get caught and they get stuck. And I think being male and being military, I think, contributed to that, like, emotional stuckness. In the military and as a man, we're often taught, go out there and do what needs to be done. You put your feelings aside and you act and you do. And there's a time and a place for that. That can be powerful. But as a way of life, it's toxic. And so, especially after big things were happening, like my father's death, that grief just was stuck and it couldn't get out. And so if we're emotionally constipated, what's the answer? The answer is an emotional laxative. And for me, psychedelics were the emotional laxative. And I think I sensed that from the video. I sensed what my problem was and I sensed the solution. And God damn it, I was right. Because that first night, once the psilocybin kicked in, oh my God, the tears, the agony, the beating of the chest, like, it all just needed to get out. And once it got out, everything could pass through freely. Because the problem with being emotionally constipated is, yeah, it keeps that sadness and that grief and that sorrow, like, stuck there. But nothing else can get through. The joy can't get through. The love can't get through. The connection can't get through. So I think that was the magic of that night, was the clearing out of the heart of all of the grief and sorrow and pain. And then once it was open, world's magic again. love flows, energy flows, joy, gratitude, awe, like all of it. So as difficult as my treatment of system depression was, it was very simple.
Wow. It's so interesting too, because as you were talking, I was thinking about how when I was first thinking about abundance, it felt like a journey, right? As many things are, but how we start in lack, scarcity, and fear, and then we take little steps and become kind of neutralized, right? When we start to disassociate ourselves with the thoughts and beliefs that are really negative that we gain from our programming or conditioning, kind of like what you're saying about male roles, right? And disassociating with that, and then really rooting into the feelings that are coming up from that, breaking away from that, and becoming kind of neutralized enough that then what you're moving toward is abundance, right? And joy and happiness and fulfillment and purpose and alignment. But that there really is a journey from the way that we used to think and feel into almost like a neutralization, into a cleaning out, like you were saying, to allow in the abundance. And so someone like me who hasn't done plant medicine before can go through that cerebral and into that feeling nature and carve myself out. But what you're saying is that there is a way with plant medicine to bypass all of that, to silence the ego a little bit more quickly, in the sense that within a ceremonial session, so you're not having to do a different alignment practices or meditate and learn to quiet the ego, but you can just quiet the ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. After that event, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what just happened. And one of the metaphors that came to me is this was like a sleeping pill for the ego. This medicine was a sleeping pill for the ego. That conscious mind, with all of its defenses and all of its very fixed, entrenched patterns, kind of just fades away for a few hours. And all those other parts of us can then come out and play. All those agoraphobic demons we push to the corners of our mind can actually come out of play when the king, the ego, is out of the way for a little bit. And once you can open up that aperture and see things differently, when you come back, it's almost difficult to go back to old ways of thinking and old ways of being. Some people do, but if you're really serious about incorporating those lessons that you found in this very special and sacred space, it can be utterly transformational. And yes, we can get there without the medicine. All of these wonderful things I'm talking about, you can get there without the medicine. But the fast track appears to be through psychedelics. And for me, maybe I was so far gone that I needed something really dramatic, really powerful to just take my head like a snow globe and just shake it up. And then once it was shaken up, snow can fall down in a different place.
Yeah. And your resonance too of that this is the answer, I feel like probably helped with you being open, more open to it, right? As opposed to somebody who's like, well, I'll just keep on trying different things until it works. There was a real buy-in even from the beginning for you.
Yeah. Yeah. There was also the gift of desperation. Like when you've tried everything, you're desperate. Like there can be this place where you just really go all in. One word for that would be surrender. I was so surrendered going into that journey. Like, okay, I can't do this. What magic is back there that can maybe help me? This is a bigger problem than Benjamin the ego can solve. So I yield to the planet, to God, to my higher self, to whatever we want to call that magic place that is accessible.
Okay, so take us more through, because I don't know where the listeners are necessarily in their own plant medicine journeys. And as you know, I have not tried it myself. So talk to us that way and walk us through what a ceremony looks like in general, because you're also, we'll talk a little bit about this too, you're also a coach around this journey, right? So tell us a little bit about all of that, please.
Sure. So there's various ways to approach these medicines. A lot of people will use them casually, and I'm not necessarily against that. But for the serious therapeutic work, there's a few routes to go. I think only the most experienced psychonauts, you know, should do this solo. So it's always being done with at least one other person. So for some people, what feels safe is doing a medicine journey with a trip sitter, with somebody watching over them. And that could be a therapist, that could be a coach, that could be a shaman of some kind. I have always felt very drawn towards group ceremonies where people are having their individual journeys, but within the room, within a collection. And to me, it feels like church. We're all here to heal and to connect with the divine. And so the participants, like me in that circumstance, were the congregation. The psychologist who's handing out the medicine, she is the priestess. And this psychedelic, magic mushrooms in my case, is the sacrament. And it's very interesting, the ancient Aztecs would call psilocybin, the magic mushrooms, flesh of the gods. And that sounds just like communion to those of us from the Christian background. So it felt for me very spiritual and very connecting. And for the psilocybin, the way it's typically done is one consumes 5 grams of mushrooms. We'll typically put on eye shades and lay down. And there's usually like a music playlist. And for those 4 to 5 hours, you are simply laying there, eyes closed, the world cut off from you, accepting whatever comes up. And because the world kind of closed off there, your subconscious just can throw up whatever it needs to throw up. There's almost no escaping at that point. It's you with your eyes closed and your subconscious communicating with you and telling you whatever needs to happen. And in that space, some people might be very still. Some people might be very emotional, like I was. Some people might be very physical. I certainly was. And that is typically 4, maybe 6 hour journey. And coming out of that afterwards, there might be an integration circle where people will sit around and talk about what they experienced and what they want to bring into their lives and how do they want to change their lives. In that, I'm talking specifically of magic mushrooms. Ayahuasca ceremonies are almost always done in a group setting. That's a vine from actually 2 medicines put together from plants from South America. So it's interesting. We talked about magic mushrooms in the ancient Aztecs. Over 9,000 years, humans have been using magic mushrooms for healing and spiritual connection. Ayahuasca has similarly been around for thousands of years, used in South America. And there's other plant medicines with very dramatic effects. And then there's artificial medicines as well, LSD being a famous one, MDMA being one that has gotten a lot of attention lately because it appears to be the most effective treatment for PTSD. And there's been a lot of study by the VA and by various academic institutions around MDMA as a treatment for PTSD. It doesn't get as much attention, but MDMA, I also think, is very profoundly healing and important in couples therapy. MDMA is a very heart-opening medicine where defenses are lowered, feelings of like empathy and love are very high. And so couples who are struggling and can't quite communicate in their normal sober state in a session together can actually really hear each other for the first time, and the relationship shifts can happen. So a lot of different medicines out there. I could talk about that for a very long time, but also notice the ailments that I've mentioned. So we've talked about depression. We've talked about PTSD. We've talked about couples therapy. We could also talk about anxiety. We could talk about end of life anxiety. There's been a lot of study around that. And so these medicines aren't like a panacea. They're not a cure for everything or everyone, but really powerful research around all those areas I've mentioned. And that research is really just at its infancy. I think what we have found in psychedelics is this is the most important tool in the history of psychology. That's my observation, both from my personal experience and from several years of working with clients
is to help them prepare for and navigate and integrate these journeys.
And talk about how these journeys are different than recreational use.
Sure, sure. So recreational use can often look like getting together with a couple friends, taking some LSD out in the forest and having a fun camping trip. Could be a couple grams of mushrooms at a fish show. Like, people do that. And I don't think that's bad. And I actually think healing can come up in those circumstances. But when we're being really intentional and serious about work, it's a different game. And I think because it is such a powerful and sacred medicine, we should be thoughtful about it. We should be reverent about it. And I divide the full journey up into three phases: preparation, navigation, integration. So the preparation piece is when you're getting ready to go on a journey. And there you think about what medicine is calling to me. Do I want to do this with one other person, like a therapist? Do I want to do this in a group setting? And why do I want it? And the word that comes up around that is intention. And we can circle back to intention later, because I think intention and manifestation is where we can really connect. But intention is, what am I trying to do with this journey? And it could be something like forgiving myself, loving my inner child, grieving a death. It's limitless what that intention could be. But that intention, whatever it is your instructions to your mind. This is what we're going to go work on. To let go of the pain of the past, to find love. Like, it's telling your mind, this is what we're going to work on. And that simple little seed then gets planted in you. And so when you then take the medicine with that intent in mind, it lets your brain kind of pull up the stuff that needs to come up. Like, if your intention is to love yourself, maybe what comes up is all these negative beliefs that you have about yourself. Maybe it's the way mom or dad used to talk to you, or how kids used to like bully you. Like, why is it we're not loving ourselves? What's the barrier? And an intention is different from an expectation. Intention should be kind of loose. Like, you throw it up before the ceremony as a prayer, and then you just surrender to whatever happens and trust that the medicine in your mind will bring up what it needs to bring up. So in preparation, you've thought about the medicine, you've thought about where you're doing it, who you're doing it with, and what your intention is. So that's preparation. And then navigation is when you're in the medicine. It's that moment you take that sip or take that pill and the mind starts doing its thing. And in there, the most important part is to surrender. Just remember, you're safe, you're sane. Whatever's happening is what needs to happen, and really surrendering to that and allowing your heart to open in that space. I think one of the universal calls of all this medicine, when we are in them, is let it out. Let it out. It might be a scream. It might be a vomit. It might be tears. It might be laughter. It might be shaking. Like, this is this invitation to just let all of that stuff out. So we've done our preparation. We've gone into the medicine. We've surrendered to it. We've done whatever, you know, bawling or shaking or revelations we need to have happen. And then the last phase is integration. And that is maybe the most important part, because if I go have this amazing experience, I get all these personal revelations, and then I immediately go back to my old way of life, doing everything I've always done the same way, nothing changes. So integration is, how do you take those mystical insights and experiences of psychedelics and bring them into the mundane? So from this journey to the mystical to the mundane, that is what integration is about. And what that looks like is going to be different for everybody. Hopefully you have a coach or a therapist you can work with as you sort out what integration looks like for you. It might mean changing the way you talk to yourself. It might mean taking care of your body and how you treat it, what you put inside it, what you do with it. It might mean quitting your job and doing something that's close to your passion.
Yeah.
It might mean ending a relationship that's unhealthy for you and or the other person. Integration is a million-faced beast. It could look like anything. My integration was very extreme. Every aspect of my life was impacted. Nothing was untouched. Every relationship changed. including my relationship to myself, including the relationship to the divine, where I lived, what I did, like everything changed for me. For many people, it can be a lot more subtle. Maybe it's taking up a meditation practice and finding stillness. So yeah, preparing in a thoughtful, intentional way, navigating in a very surrendered, open-hearted way, and then integrating in a way where you're really just willing to do the work. And I'll say one last thing on integration. I think there's three questions around integration that matter the most. What are the insights I gain from this experience? And based on those insights, what am I going to do differently? And how am I going to be different? And I think as complicated as integration can be, based on the uniqueness of all of us, those three questions get at the core of it. What are my insights? What am I going to do? What am I going to be? That is integration.
Beautiful. And that whole process can happen in one sitting, like the 4 to 6 hours, or is it you do the pre-work before the actual ceremony?
Yeah. So the 4 to 6 hours is that middle piece of navigation. So the preparation piece is hopefully going on for at least a couple weeks, maybe a month, maybe multiple months. And it can be a time where, you know, you're journaling, you're talking to your therapist, you're maybe doing some artwork and just also life. When you're in that preparation phase, life will tell you what you need to work on. There's some medicine magic going on before you even take it. Yeah, so the preparation piece is weeks to months. The navigation piece is, depending on the medicine, could be 4 hours. Some medicines are much longer than that, 8 hours, 12 hours, depending on what it might be. And then the integration piece is the rest of your life.
Right.
When I coach people, it's at least a couple Zoom sessions afterwards. Sometimes it's an ongoing relationship. But I really do view the integration as going on forever. There might be a formal integration period of a few weeks or a couple months, 6 months maybe. But integration is a lifelong process. Just that one first mushroom experience I talked about on April 16th of 2021, I will spend the rest of my life integrating that experience.
Okay. So I'll be really honest, because perhaps some other people as they're listening to this are feeling the same thing as well. For me, I think one of the things that holds me back from experiencing something like this is control.
Yeah.
The idea of taking a substance and having absolutely no idea how it's going to impact me, like stepping fully into the unknown and also not being able to retract it.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I'm 5 minutes into this journey and it feels fucking crazy and I don't like it and I want to get out.
Yeah.
That control is kind of like, And as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, you're saying it could be anywhere from 4 hours to 12 hours, the medicine experience. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, if there's like 12 hours of this experience, when you get to the integration part, can you remember everything that happens or comes up or that you feel by the time you get to the integration part? So a little part of me was like, again, cerebralness. Yeah. Oh, I feel like I would need to be taking notes, right, of everything coming up. Or maybe that's what the therapist or the coach or somebody who's helping you through. And then the other control issue I came up upon when you were talking was like, oh, okay, so you're just like throwing up and like screaming or like making crazy movements in front of a bunch of people. All right, cool. Nope, that doesn't sound like something. And I'm not really in control. And so then I was thinking, maybe I'm not really fully understanding the consciousness part of this. Like, maybe you can guide me in understanding better between the experience itself and then moving into or out of the experience, what, I guess, physiologically happens, quell my fears a little bit about like losing myself and then reintegrating into myself, please.
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot there. But I, the best starting place is that idea of control. That idea of losing control. And I would say that's the point. That's the point, because we walk around in this normal, non-altered state as control freaks. Like all of us are trying to control the world. We're trying to control how fast the car in front of us is going and what our kids are doing and how our partner behaves. And we are all control freaks. We're all playing God all day long in our head. And I think part of the magic of psychedelics is that letting go of control, that word of surrender. And I think the way to feel safe going in and letting go of that control is part of that preparation piece. Am I safe with these people? This woman or man who's holding space for me, are they reputable? Do they make me feel good when I talk to them? Is there good word of mouth? Have I interacted with them beforehand? Do I really feel safe to let go in front of them? And I think the magic really does happen when we let go. And that's why that word surrender is so important. And you can fight for control on the medicine. You can resist. And usually one of two things is going to happen. If you're in a place of resistance and trying to keep control, it's probably not going to be very effective. Or it can actually make it worse.
Right.
The more you fight it, actually, the worse it gets. And the more you surrender, the easier it is. And people have a fear around having a bad trip. And I encourage my clients to get rid of that vocabulary. The way we're doing this, there's no such thing as a bad trip. There is a challenging trip. And sometimes the challenging trips are the best goal that we can find. And that idea of having some fear is, it's so natural. It's so normal. I think it's Joseph Campbell who has the famous quote, "In the cave you fear to enter is the treasure that you seek." So if we're afraid to go face something, that's exactly what we should do. If we really want victory in this transformation, in this healing world, the fear is a good indicator of where we need to go. Tears are a good indicator of where we need to go. If we're exploring something and it brings up nothing for us, that's not where our work is. And so I think to feel safe, it's finding and building a set and a setting and a person or a group where you can really let go. The more you can get let go, I think the more progress is going to be made. As far as the duration goes, so typically I work with people around psilocybin or MDMA. And those, thankfully, are four-hour medicines. And that's why they've been so studied, I think, in academia, is because that's one shift. And if you talk about a medicine like LSD, where it's longer, maybe 8 hours or 10, that's a little more difficult to study. So 4 to 6 hours is a pretty common length. There is a very fascinating plant called Iboga, which appears to be the most effective treatment of opioid addiction. And that one is the longest psychedelic. That one, even 24 hours later, you can still be seeing some effects. The initial part is about 10 hours, but the effects really linger for that one. But that's not a medicine most people go to. San Pedro, this cactus that's ubiquitous around California, produces a 10 to 12 hour trip, but it's such a gentle, loving medicine, you don't even mind. So for most people who are exploring this space, they're probably going to magic mushrooms or MDMA, which is, 4, maybe 5 hours. Let's see, you hit a lot in there. What did I miss?
I think one of the things is, I understand the trusting of the people that you're going to be with. And for you personally, you said that you gravitate toward being with other people. And I loved the way that you put it about being in a church and that you're all there to essentially grow and expand. And so with that in mind, does that help you feel more comfortable around people when you're having this experience? Because you're looking at it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So for most of us, maybe all of us, our deepest wounds are in relation to other people. When we think about the true deepest hurts within us and our core wounds, it's almost always about a connection, a relationship to another person. And so I believe that just as we get wounded in relationship to other people, so do we heal in relationship to other people. And so for me, healing in a group setting has been very therapeutic. Probably ties back to my core wound as a child of not belonging, of being all alone in this world. And so for me to like heal like in communion with other people, like it soothes that core wound. And at a deeper level, I actually do think we're all one and that the healing of one is the healing of all. And there are moments in ceremonies where I have felt like there is a healing happening in me that's very related to this healing of another person. Like Ram Dass says, we're all here to carry each other home. I do think that this is how we carry each other home. And as he also says, the only thing I can do for you is work on me. And the only thing you can do for me is work on you. Like this communal healing, I think, is spiritually profound. And I also think it's biological. So if I am all alone and I'm taking a big dose of psychedelics and there's nobody watching over me, I'm not actually safe. I can't really fully let go because I don't have anybody looking out for me. And so that's why having at least one other person there will help you. Like, okay, you're going to help me. You're going to make sure I'm safe. If there's a fire, if I need help getting to the bathroom, like you're here. Okay, now I can let go. Now I can surrender. And in a group that's healthy and has good boundaries and structure and is being led, the group ceremony almost adds this other layer of protection. I am part of a group. I am part of a tribe. And at like a primal level, like I do think it takes us back to this core place where we can really let go in this communal healing. We are wounded in relationship. We are healed in relationship. That is how this game works.
Okay. And then the other part I'd like you to circle back on is when you're actually in the journey itself, you've taken the plant medicine. Can you describe what, we'll use psilocybin, can you describe what happens, like either physically or physiologically?
No.
Okay.
Because it's different for everybody.
Sure.
So I will talk for me and then I'll talk about what I observed with other people. So for me, I tend not to get visuals, which is kind of unusual. Tap into my heart. I feel like emotions very deeply. I tend to be very physical. My body wants to like move and, you know, dance and express. And there's a place of revelation in there. It is like when I am on psilocybin, it is like I find a pathway back to my highest self, to this part of me that has tremendous wisdom about my life, my flaws, my sins, my beautiful parts. Like I can tap into my highest self, and so I can leave with many revelations. You had talked earlier about like, well, I'm going to want to take notes to capture all of this. I don't necessarily recommend it, but my second major mushroom journey, I was constantly coming up and writing in my journal. And then I'd go back down, I'd come up, I'd write in my journal. So I really felt it was important to capture everything in that moment. Another thing that can be helpful, especially with MDMA, where it's more external and verbal, is to record the session. I have a 4.5-hour recording of a MDMA therapy session that I had done. And I have gone back and listened to it multiple times because then I can hear what is Ben thinking and talking about when his ego's out of the way and he's in a place of love and empathy. This is what comes out of Ben when he is in the medicine. And to go back and to hear that like word for word in the tones as well is helpful. But even if I'm not taking notes and I'm not recording it, most of what comes up is so big, you're not going to forget it. And afterwards, typically when people come out, they're talking about it, they're writing about it, they're doing art about it. There's ways to capture what was experienced. But what was experienced is often very difficult to describe, and it's different for everybody. Some people have just magical, mythical visions, deep symbolism and archetypes. And these visions, these movies that can come up are impactful to them as my more physical and revelatory experience might be. Yeah, you know, we can go out and we can read other people's trip reports about what their experiences are, and that can be helpful, but it can be unhelpful too, because it can set up expectations and disappointment. Like, oh, I didn't get the eye candy that this other person did. I don't get the visuals.
Right.
To another person, like, I don't know what I was supposed to learn from all that. Like, it wasn't clear to me. Like, I saw a lot of things, I felt a lot of things, but I don't know what it like means. And so it can be very different from person to person. And it can also be very different from trip to trip. My first experience, the first half was just agony. It was just pain. It was sobbing. It was rough. And then the second half was some of the greatest bliss I've ever experienced in my life. It was like going through hell in order to get to heaven. And so I thought, oh, well, that's what mushroom experiences are like. And then the second time I did it, it was nothing like that. The second time I did it, it was a scolding. When I kept coming out and writing things down, it was actually all the people I needed to apologize to in my life.
Hmm.
So the medicine will give us what we need. It won't always give you what you want, but it will always give you what you need. And sometimes that is a scolding. Sometimes that is a soothing. Sometimes that is a physical release of some kind. It is always different. Every medicine, every experience, every person, it is always different.
Okay, so you mentioned that for you, it's not visual, but the way that it's communicating to you or even through you, looking back at maybe some of the journaling that you've done, or again, listening to the one session that you recorded, and how you can tell that this is like higher consciousness, Ben, I guess I'm trying to associate it with something else. Is there anything that you can point to that you felt mirrors that experience without being on a plant medicine journey?
Yes. In a more general human sense, I would say it is very similar to a mystical experience or a religious experience. When we read about some of the great mystical experiences humans have had, some of which have led to religions being founded, it is very similar to that. So I think we are tapping into a mystical place that other people can get to without medicine, maybe through meditation, maybe through prayer, maybe through some other devotion. Psychedelics are just a more certain way to get to that mystical place. Last September, I went to therapy boot camp. This was the Hoffman Institute. It was 7 days. They took away your phone. You're not supposed to exercise. Like, all the stuff that we distract ourselves with is taken away. And we spent about 13, 14 hours a day doing very deep somatic therapy. And at the end of that 7 days, I thought, wow, that was the most powerful internal revelatory experience I've ever had without medicine. And even with medicine, the only thing that compares is my very first mushroom experience. So that 7-day therapy boot camp that was very somatically based was as powerful or more powerful than almost every psychedelic experience I've ever had. So that shows me, yeah, we can get to this place, deep insight, ego out of the way, really looking into that cave that we fear without the medicine. We can do that. But again, the structure really had to be right. The distractions had to be taken away. We had to have guides who were leading us through this who had already been on their own hero's journey. And we had to be really willing to go into that cave. So that was, yeah, an experience of being on medicine without being on any medicine.
Okay. And describe a little bit more about what that feels like on the other side of going into the cave and then coming back out of the cave with a little bit more connection, alignment, wisdom. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so it's, again, different every time, every person. The first time it happened was extraordinary. Like, at the ceremony after the third day, I said to the psychologist, I said, look, this is not my ego talking. Something extraordinary happened to me. Like, the energy that I'm feeling, like, it is unbelievable, like bliss. And it persisted for months. Like, for months, this, like, energy that was flowing through me was just so, yeah, extraordinary. It's difficult to put into words. I've attempted to put it into words, but it's difficult. And at one point, maybe 4 months into this, I said to my therapist, this is great. I love this feeling. It's a lot. It would be nice if this would dial down. Like, the bliss was so much. I said, like, we're at an 11 now. Can we get this down to like a 7? And eventually, you know, it did fade and I got normalized, like, back in life. But it was very disruptive.
And I imagine to an outsider, it might have looked like mania. So that was a really, extraordinary one. Typically, it's not that strong. For a lot of people, there is an afterglow that can last for days or maybe weeks. There can be big ideas about changes that one wants to make in their life. And we should be careful about that. Recommend to people, don't make any major life decisions for 2 weeks after a journey. Don't immediately go quit your job and decide to become, a painter. Maybe that's the right answer, but let's go slow. And don't go home and immediately break up with your partner. Like, let that stuff simmer, because people can come out of it with a great certainty and a euphoria. And if they're not grounded and counseled, that could be disruptive and maybe even a little bit dangerous. But for a lot of people, there is a very clear head afterwards, kind of like your mind's just gone through a car wash. And there are people for whom it's a big shrug. Like, some people do walk away not feeling significant changes, maybe not having big revelations. And there's any number of reasons why that could be. Maybe they didn't prepare properly. Maybe psychedelics just aren't the answer for them. Maybe they weren't willing to do the integration work. Maybe they weren't willing to look into some of the caves that they actually needed to go into to really heal.
Okay. So one more question about the experience itself. The listening to yourself back on the recording and being like, that's the higher consciousness, Ben. Obviously, the tone isn't different, but like, how do you know it's higher consciousness Ben coming through? As opposed to you saying it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure, sure. And maybe only a fool believes his own hallucinations, right? We should probably, assess. Like, if I'm coming out of it and I think I'm God and I need to go start a cult, okay, maybe I need to be checked there. But I feel like I'm pulling out a New Testament quote, you'll know it by its fruits. So after I had my big experience 4 years ago, I had a very open conversation with a psychologist, and I said, I think this might look like mania. But I asked you this, where is the fruits of mania? What is the fruits of what I'm going through? Because when I looked around at the fruit of what I was going through, I was being more loving to people. I was developing deeper connections. The stuff that I was writing was compassionate and kind and wise. Things were working out in a pretty magical way. There was a greater propensity for forgiveness and empathy. So I think the fruits were revelatory, were indicators that I was on the right path.
Okay.
Yeah, I came out of that experience and was being hateful or greedy or fill in your negative word. Then I think there is some questioning to be had there. But the fruit was so beautiful. The fruit was so loving that I never had any doubt that this was coming from my eyes.
Okay, loving. That was the word that I was wondering, because the reason why I'm asking that is because I feel like sometimes I have an inner voice that takes over, and sometimes it's auditory and sometimes I'm writing. And I know that it's not really me, like the little me, the ego me, the normal human consciousness me, because it is so loving and certain and kind. And then there is a feeling of wisdom that goes beyond belief, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like you're describing.
Yeah, I think that's extremely accurate. And it makes me think about Peart's work. So these different voices that we all have in our head, one of those voices is coming from the control freak. Another voice is coming from the wounded child inside. The other voice is coming from this part of you that wants to drink or smoke weed to avoid feeling difficult stuff. We have all those parts in there, and they all have their characteristics and energy. But at the center of all of those parts is, I think, the truth self. The true self, the spiritual self, the higher self, whatever word you want to give to that, the God within, if that's helpful for people. And that voice is unique. And you know it when it's that voice.
there is a wisdom to it. And it knows what to tell us when. Just like my second big experience, my highest self needed to scold me. And other times my highest self needs to tell me, you're focusing too much on yourself. It's time to focus more on other people. I have a shift that's occurring in real time right now. So after I had my awakening, I haven't worked in 4 years in any kind of traditional capacity. And it's been this kind of hibernation period of healing Benjamin. And now the medicine is telling me that that's over. That's done. This myopic focus on me, it's over. It's time to turn outward. And I don't think that's the ego talking. I don't think that's the wounded inner child talking. I don't think it's the control freak talking. Like, that is my highest soul saying, okay, enough of this loving yourself, Benjamin. You're good there. Go love other people better. Be of service. Go be of purpose. Go climb the second mountain.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the book is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's the entryway to this more outward focus out in the world. Like, all this time focus inward was necessary.
Right.
But that part of the story is over. Now it's going outward. And I mentioned Joseph Campbell a lot. He's the most famous for the hero's journey. That is the hero's journey. You go through this dark night of the soul. You go into the cave. You find the elixir. And then you return to the ordinary world with this elixir and you share it with other people. That is the hero's journey. And I am at the 11 o'clock position there, about to head out, which is the beginning of its no hero's journey.
Right. Right. And you were saying earlier about, I've been loving myself and now I get to turn that outward. And even in the turning it outward, we are still loving ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's literally following that next step in the journey, in the process. And there's so much more to receive while we're giving.
Yeah. It's so interesting, like this idea around like love and self-love. I, for most of my life, did a terrible, terrible job at loving myself. And after the mushrooms, I became quite adept at loving myself. And it sounds selfish, but it is the most altruistic thing you could do. Because the more loving I was to myself, the more loving I was to everybody else. I found myself to be a much better ex-husband than I was as a husband. I found myself in time being a more allowing, accepting, affectionate father. I found myself becoming a more intimate friend with people in my life, friendlier with strangers. It is this great symbiotic circle of love. And at the deepest spiritual level, we're all one anyway. So the more I love you, the more I am actually loving myself, because we're all just God in disguise, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. Okay. So I think my penultimate question is, okay, so you take it once and have your plant medicine journey and integrate from there. So if you integrate what you learned, what is the reason or need to have other journeys?
Yeah. So there are people who are one and done. They'll go have their experience and move on. For many people, including myself, we do go back to the well over and over. And a lot of things draw me to it. One is, it is kind of my church. Mm-hmm. So returning to an ayahuasca ceremony every 4 months or so, like, to me is part of just going to church.
Yeah.
Confessing my sins, communing with God and my neighbor, all that good mm-hmm. stuff. So there is like that kind of ceremonial spiritual aspect for it. Also, there is layer after layer after layer of healing to do. And then at a certain point, it can even be not about healing. When I go to medicine today, I'm not looking there for healing. I'm not looking for self-improvement anymore. I'm actually looking for connection to the divine and all of the bliss and peace and love that that entails. I'm kind of done personally with the trauma and drama. Mm-hmm. Now, eventually life might grab me by the collar and show me I have some more serious work to do. But yeah, at a certain point, it doesn't have to be about healing. it can be about living and living more fully and connecting with the divine and connecting with other people and fun. There's actually nothing wrong with having fun.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess it's like with anything, the journey is never over. And what we were talking about earlier, moving from lack, scarcity, and fear, neutralizing that, and then just really being in the bliss of life.
Yeah.
So that's where you kind of are on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, okay, tell us when the book is coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. So the plan is September. I'm going to launch it initially in paperback. I'm going to follow maybe 4 to 6 months after that with a audiobook. I want to do it in my own voice. And then I hope that the book and the audiobook will then be a platform and a gateway to many more opportunities, speaking engagements, advocacies, podcasts like this one, workshops. Just like I told the psychologist that first weekend, this is the most interesting thing in the world, and I need to be a part of this somehow. And so the book publication is my first step on that new journey and becoming part of that world somehow.
And I don't think we actually have the title yet. We didn't say that.
So oh, sure. Title? Yeah, it's not publicly available. Eventually, it'll be available for pre-order. But the title is Trip of a Lifetime. The subtitle is The Psychedelic Guide to Healing, Loving, and Living. And it is structured in a way where the 10 great psychedelic lessons that I have learned are laid out for the reader. And I walk them through preparation, navigation, and integration. So somebody who knows maybe almost nothing about psychedelics, but is just curious, can actually pick up this book and within a couple hundred pages have seen, what can psychedelics do? How do I prepare for them? How do I deal with the journey itself? And how do I bring those lessons into my life? It's written in a very friendly self-help sort of style, which is something I don't think has really been done yet. I think it's great for beginners. It's great for people who are maybe still working with the medicine, but want a little structure or inspiration around it. I think for the right person, it could be utterly transformational. If you're open to it, I have a very brief little passage I wanted to read.
Sure.
So this is from the prologue. I tell a little bit about my story and then I turn it over to the reader. And to the reader, I say this. Beneath your pain, a whisper waits. This quiet voice invites you to save yourself from the darkness. Find warm connections with like-hearted souls. Bathe shamelessly in self-love. Relish the rapture of being alive. Trust in life in the face of death. If you desire such things, your slumber is over. This book is your wake-up bomb.
Yay! I love that. Your wake-up bomb. Very cool.
Yeah.
So wonderful. And we'll have all of the information once it comes out in the show notes, and we will air it before so that way people can start to get to know you a little bit more. I'm so excited for the book because I've gotten to read some of it. I haven't read it all yet, and it's fabulous, and I love it. Being a person who obviously hasn't tried it and is still on the fence, right? Maybe at the end of the book, I won't be on the fence anymore. We'll see. And also, I'm excited for this next step in the journey for you, this creative endeavor of putting it out to the masses and how much fun that's going to be, because you had this beautiful creativeness with actually creating the book, and now you're going to move into all of the pushing it out.
I'm very excited about that part as well. Maybe even more excited. I love having conversations about this. I love sharing the lessons and the wisdom and everything. So that'd actually be the fun part.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for having me on. I think you are such a natural for this, because when I was first getting to know you and we were hanging out, it was almost like being on a podcast, because you have such a curious mind and so many questions and follow-up questions and just probing in to how people think and figuring it all out. So you're a very natural fit for this. And I'm extremely grateful to be your friend and to be here talking with you today.
Thank you. When you were talking about the hero's journey and how there is this small voice that sometimes says, or maybe loud voice, the time for inner work is done. It's time to, well, I mean, of course, the inner work never ends, but you know what I mean? The focus, the pure focus on the inner work is done. And it's time to go out there and present everything that you've learned in your journey. I could feel myself getting a little emotional because it was like, this is what the podcast is. So yes, I love it. And I love that we're in sync and synchronicity with all this, and we're co-creating together and we're supporting one another. This is what it's all about, just to bring it back full circle to what we were talking about earlier. So thank you.
Yeah, it's been beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and being part of this community. I want to hear from you. Did something resonate with you in this episode? Are you experiencing awakenings or synchronicities in your life? Do you have any questions or ideas for the podcast in general? Email me at podcast@abundancewithathena.com or DM me on Instagram at abundancewithathena and share with me your stories. And with your permission, I'll share them with our community. And until next time, keep awakening to the abundance that's always within you.